Unfortunately, my brother Michael, who was in Ladder 7 FDNY in 2012, he took his life. I still to this day have trouble even wrapping my head around, I hate that expression, but wrapping my head around the fact that he did this without calling anybody. It was so unexpected. I was unprepared for suicide. I didn't have a playbook for it. The book thing was a complete and utter accident. Because it's New York, everybody was trying to be noticed. So they name drop it. Oh, I went to the Culinary Institute in Hyde Park. I'm a firehouse cook. There was a successful fireman cookbook years ago, but he had a triple bypass. I'd probably do a healthy firehouse cookbook. And the teacher said, that's a pretty good idea.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with Dr. Stacy Raymond. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with veteran FDNY firefighter Joseph Bonanno. He's a Academy-trained chef and host of the YouTube TV show American Firehouse Cuisine. We'll be speaking to him about firehouse cuisine and first responder suicide. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, PBSRadio.com, all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Joseph after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers
with vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Wimley, LCSW, EMTB.
This episode is made possible by Rebound by Restore Ear, revolutionary cold therapy for hearing loss prevention. To learn more, visit RestoreEar.com. That's RestoreEar.com.
Our guest today is Joseph Bonanno. He's a U.S. Air Force veteran and a veteran of the FDNY. Joseph comes from a family of firefighters. His father, Joseph T. Bonanno, worked at Engine 88. And his brother Michael worked at Ladder 7. And while he was a firefighter, Joe became certified as a fitness trainer and a nutritionist. And with his fitness and nutrition background, he prepared healthy meals for the firefighters he worked with. I wish I was on your shift because I'm sure it was rocking. He's the author of The Healthy Firehouse Cookbook, The Firehouse Grilling Cookbook, and American Firehouse Cuisine. Joseph entered and won many firehouse cooking contests, including America's Greatest Firehouse Chef, the FDNY Bake Off, the International Firefighter Olympic Culinary Division, and the Florida State Iron Chef Competition. Joseph, warm welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Hey, good morning, David. Good morning, Stacy. Thank you.
It's great to have you. I'd like to start off, just tell us a little bit about how you got into the fire service. I know there's a family history there, but you could have chosen something else. Why did you choose to become a firefighter?
Well, my father was, as he said, a New York City firefighter in the South Bronx in what they call the war years in the FDNY. And he didn't promote it that much to me to say, I want you to be like me, follow in my footsteps. To be honest with you, I was actually almost a renegade type of a teenager. And I'm like, I don't want to do what my father did for a living. But when he would take me to parties and picnics that the firefighters would have, what I saw was that they all looked like they're having a great time. They all looked like that. One guy was funny. One person was funnier than the next.
Yeah.
Comedians, and I'm like, this seems like a pretty fun group and they're making a living doing it.
Yeah.
And then I was just graduating college and I remember I went on a job interview, like a regular business type job interview. And I remember asking, how much vacation do you get the first year? And the guy's, the first year you get 5 days. And after 5 years, you get 2 weeks. I'm like, 2 weeks? So then I remember my father would be off for like, and I remember when I was taking the test, it was 6 weeks in a row. Your first year, you get 5 to 6 weeks vacation. And so I was fighting it, battling whether I wanted to do it or not. And I remember my father, the only time he got really strict with it, he says, I don't care if you take the job or not, but you're taking the test. You can turn it down. You can turn it down. And what turned the corner for me is when I went to the Jamaica Armory in Queens train for the physical part of it. That's when I met a bunch. I couldn't believe how crowded it was, how many people were trying out for this. I was like, there's got to be something to it if there's this many people trying out for it. And then I met like minds like myself. And one of the people I talked to this day, was in Engine 290. I still talk to him to this day. He's a good friend of mine, Tom Pellegrino. He's the one that since he was a baby, he wanted to be a New York City fireman. I remember him saying to me, Joe, you can't even think twice about not taking this. You know, because if another job you call in sick, you don't get paid. And so I said, I was in the military. I don't want it with the uniforms and the yes, sir, and the no, sir, and all that, and shiny shoes. He goes, Joe, that's the academy. Once you finish the academy, it's like a frat house, which my father never alluded to that. Maybe because he was having so much fun at work. Yeah. He wanted to share the craziness and the fun and the camaraderie. He really was very, very quiet about it. But this person, this Tom Pellegrino, he really, I'll repeat it to this day. One of the things you get is a pension, which when you're 22 years old, like, what's a pension? Mm-hmm. He goes, Joe, you work 20 years, then they give you half pay for the rest of your life. And I'm like, well, if you're working and you can't make it on full pay, how do you make it on half pay? And he goes, no, with the tax adjustments and everything, it's almost the same take-home pay, which I couldn't conceive of. And I'm like, pension doesn't mean anything when you're 22, because you never think you're going to be 50. It's inconceivable. And I'll repeat the story to this day. He said to me, and I said, Tom, what if I hate it? And he goes, well, we're going to get on around 1979. Even if you hate it, you only have to hate it till 1999. But when it's 1999, I said, Tom, that's Star Trek to me.
You're right.
It's a long time.
Star Trek, we'll be in space and we'll have phasers and, you know, transporter rooms. And 1999 is inconceivable. And I remember I was working and it was a spring and it was a particularly – not the busy shift, but the guys I was working with was a little bit of a pain in the neck. And I was like, oh my God, I got to listen to this guy who will shift and everything like that. And I remember looking up at the calendar and it was, I go, oh my God, it's the spring of 1999. I could quit if I want. Wow. You know? And just, I didn't, but it, just to have that. So that's what turned the corner for me. And then, yes, my father, God rest his soul, to this day, got to really greatly appreciate his influence on me on taking the fire department test. Mm, mm-hmm. I really realized, you know, if I didn't meet that guy and promote me, but he made me take the test. And that was the thing. Cause once I actually physically got called to be a fireman and I was looking at other options, I'm like, no, I'm not working 5 years to get 5 days off. And then it was the best decision in my life.
So great. Sometimes we meet people at that, you know, crucial moment that really helps steer us in the right direction. And it sounds like you
need
that.
Yeah. And you need that little, and I have other friends that they went the other way. And, you know, I remember at that time I had friends that were, I was doing construction work. I had friends that were sheetrockers and framers and, you know, that Joe, I got to take a cut and pay to take this job. I go, yeah, but you're going to be 50 someday and you're not going to want to be doing sheetrock. The ability to have a pension and, you know,
whole other career if you want afterwards.
According to recent studies, over half of firefighters report changes to their hearing since entering the fire service. This can be attributed to exposure to loud noise. Over time, special cells in our ears, which transmit auditory information to our brain, become damaged or die due to an inflammatory response, resulting in noise-induced hearing loss. However, there is a solution. Therapeutic hypothermia, commonly known as cooling, can reduce inflammation and injury. Take control of your hearing health with research-backed Rebound, an effective way to reduce inner ear damage associated with hearing loss after loud noise exposure. Early studies show that wearing Rebound after a fire shift results in better hearing function. Rebound can help protect firefighters' hearing and reduce the risk of long-term damage. Don't wait to protect your hearing. It's time to Rebound. Visit RestoreEar.com to get your Rebound today.
Before we kind of jump into the firehouse culinary work, let's talk a little bit about suicide, because I know it's an important topic for you. Like, how have you been impacted by suicide?
Twice in my career. excuse me, I'll get a little choked up, but I had a real good friend I worked with, Tony Perella, his name was, great fireman, lousy cook, but great fireman, fun guy to work with and stuff. And he went through a divorce situation, and he took his life, which really, really set everybody in that firehouse back, because it's always unexpected, and how could they, and stuff like that. And then years later, unfortunately, my brother Michael, who I worked side by side, who was in Ladder 7, FDNY, in 2012, he took his life. Wow. And as unexpected as nobody could believe, I still to this day have trouble even wrapping my head around, I hate that expression, but wrapping my head around the fact that he did this without calling anybody, without it was so unexpected. And he was a good, great looking guy, fun, great fireman, good cook, had everything going for him. He was married with a daughter. And the impacting part of the story, I don't like to focus on the hows of that, which for us right now, it's inconceivable for somebody. I have no trouble relating the story because it's so impactful. He dropped his daughter off at school. He drove to in Cleveland. He was retired. He had hurt his back. He was on disability pension, and he lived in Cleveland. He dropped his daughter off at school. He drove to the Valley View Bridge in Cleveland, Ohio. He walked 8 minutes to the highest part of the bridge, and he jumped off the bridge. Mm. And not into a river, into hard ground.
Oh.
And never mind my brother or a fellow, how a human being can do that and not realize. And, when my friend Tony Perella killed himself, my brother Michael was in the room with me when I got the call. I collapsed crying into my brother's arms.
Right, right.
So he knew the impact of suicide, yet years later, he did the same thing. And it's hard for anybody to, you're in the school, Stacy, you're
school. Right.
How could somebody get up one morning? And then, you start ruminating on, did he plan it? Did it was just a moment that did it, at that moment, did he just say I had it, or did he have this days in advance? And then how could you think the, they call it 6 degrees of separation. How could you not think of the wave of people?
Right.
Including me.
Correct.
When my brother gets this news, he's going to be, and did he say, I don't care? I don't know. And I've done tremendous amount of reading to try to understand it. And I understand, it's tunnel vision that gets like this.
Yes.
And this is the only option. Right. I know I have family and friends, but they'll deal with it. But I'm out of here.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Usually it's impulsive and it's a quick escape out of whatever it was he was dealing with. You said he was injured, right?
He had back pain. His marriage, maybe, a normal marriage stuff going on. And
also, if he was on medication, if he was taking pain meds, that can alter, sometimes.
And
you know,
he was taking antidepressant stuff too.
Right.
I don't know the cocktail that happened to that morning.
Correct. You don't know.
I'm sure you've heard, you've dealt with it. My friend, one of his best friends talked to him on Sunday. He sounded fine.
Yeah.
He didn't say Tuesday morning, I think I'm going to go,
jump off
a bridge,
Right.
And then that part of it is, I still will never understand because, both of us worked as firemen. We worked on ladders, seven stories in the air, and I've done it myself. I've been seven stories in the air. I'm like, oh my God, if I ever took a header from here.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That I would think that would be the worst way to, take a bunch of, I'm not suggesting it, but I'm saying, why wouldn't you just take a bunch of pills and go to sleep? But why would you take these demonstrative ways? And, I've come to understand when they do it in demonstrative ways, it's almost a message to, I don't know. I'll never understand it.
Right. And that's the hardest thing, I think, on survivors is the why, right? Especially if they didn't leave a note and there was no indication, a warning. The why is always lingering. And that's very difficult.
Well, so if you tell somebody, the first question they ask is why? Were they getting divorced? Did they have financial problems? There's always a why. But why, you could say, well, they were getting to have a relationship problem, they're getting a divorce. Well, does everybody that gets divorced take their life? No. Why, you know, does everybody have financial problems, take their life? No, that's, you know, it for them, it was, I don't know why that was their answer, but something in the wiring went.
Yep. All right. So, Joseph, how did you cope with this? Like, what resources did you, helped you out eventually?
You know, you talk about PTSD. It was so shocking. I actually threw up that morning, I heard. That's how shocking it was. And it does short circuit your own mind. Like, why didn't he call? Why didn't he, you know, how, no, did he? You really, you don't know where to access to. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I started looking online to, you know, how do you survive suicide? How do you, and I found Jeff Dill from the FFBHA.org. He's a great, he's a retired captain from Palatine Fire Department, and he has an organization for first responders. And, you know, I called him and then, you know, more and more reading, and then a local support group, you know, and so, and then you go and you say, oh my God, I'm here with 10 people that, And the same, everybody has a story that's, yes, it was somebody they cared about. Yes, they can't believe it. Yes, it was done in a horrible way. And I don't know how that makes you feel better, but it does. You know, and then you just, you know, I can't say there was one specific thing that happened to get over it. I don't think you ever get over it. The best way I described it is like having your leg blown off. Initially, there's a shock and a huge amount of pain. You're losing blood. You have to stop the bleeding.
Right.
All right. Then you get to a doctor, which that was help and online help and in-person help, whatever. And okay, the bleeding stopped. And now they're like, okay, now you got to learn to live without your leg.
Sure.
The rest of your life. You have to learn how to walk differently. You have to, the pain initially is unbelievable. Once the pain stops and you stop the bleeding, and then it's a matter of, and that's the best way to learn. You know, I lost a leg. I'll never have another leg back. And I have to learn to walk one leg. And so I have to learn to live without, you know, my brother, who I love dearly. And, you know, I might say soldier on, because that's not really the right way of doing it. It's certainly not my personality. It just, and one of the things I read is, you know, if you haven't experienced it, nobody gives you a playbook. This is how you deal with suicide.
Correct.
You know, this is one of my friends said, Joe, none of us, one of his friends and my friends, he said, Joe, none of us had a playbook on how to deal with this. So we don't even know how to handle you, you know, in this. Do we call you often? Do we not call you? Do we try to laugh? Everything changes. You know, if your friends see you and they want to tell you something funny that happened, they feel funny saying something funny because they don't want to make you laugh.
Correct.
And you don't know when the right time to laugh, when the right time to not laugh, when the right time to cry. There's no playbook for it.
No. You know, we in our program sometimes talk about post-traumatic growth. What did you learn from this, either about yourself or about just people that commit suicide or complete suicide, I should say? Is there any take home? Is there anything that, did you grow from this in any way?
I would love to say, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, which I hate that expression. Uh-huh. Sometimes it doesn't make you stronger. Sometimes it makes you weaker. Sometimes it, and I soldiered on through it. No, I was unprepared for having my leg blown off. I was unprepared for suicide. Yeah. I didn't have a playbook for it. I accessed online stuff, support groups, the support group from FFBHA.org, other groups, other people. And then little by little, you get your mental health. You know, I mean, when it happened, I said, I'll never laugh again. Ever. I can't see it. When I'm ever, and that's the part that gets scary, is that how am I going to go on with the rest of my life now having to deal with this? And I was at 9/11 too, which was a big enough deal.
Sure. Me too,
you know, so I've had quite a few. I lost my mother in 1981 in a fire in our house. And she died actually in the Nassau County Burn Center in front of me and my brother Michael. So we had that to deal with.
Yeah.
And then 9/11 and then a suicide.
Right.
So, you know, I don't like to be put on the pedestal of you. Oh, wow. Look at the things you survived. And you're not a drug addict. You're not drunk. You're not you're a pariah for the, I'm not, I don't really feel like that. I feel like you are a reluctant hero, if you will. I had to figure out how to have a life. Right,
but you're a warrior of life, and you've survived, and so you know that people would probably want to know, how did you do it? Like, how did you go through all that? And you can laugh, right? Because we were laughing before.
I've
started this.
Yeah, you can go on vacation and you can laugh, but you don't think you're ever going to be able to thoroughly enjoy anything again. It's always going to be there.
Yeah.
And you know, as I steer the conversation towards, like you said, what did you learn from it? You know, my message to any firefighter out there that is struggling with anything, and certainly I've had my moments too in the past. After I lost my mother, I contemplated taking my life myself.
Wow. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I guess I never, you have circuit breakers, like in your house, you have circuit breakers. Well, I have my family, I have my friends, I have my, but when all the circuit breakers go off, guys I work with, you know, then it's like go time and you take your life. And the biggest thing, takeoff, I don't know if the word instruct is the right word, to firefighters who are struggling, who have had terrible things happen to them, be it financial, relationship, health issues. A common theme I've seen in the people that take their life is making a mountain out of a molehill. And what I said before, not everybody that gets divorced takes their life. Not everybody that has a financial crisis takes their life.
Yeah.
Not everybody that has a health issue takes their life.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people do, because I believe they've made a mountain out of a molehill.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, oh my God, I lost my job and now I can't pay for my house. They're foreclosing on my house. The walls are coming in on, you know, and then they take their life.
Right. Yep.
But,
and they've eliminated any chance of overcoming that problem.
Well, it seems hopeless at the time when you have a financial crisis or the love of your life leaves you for your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I'll never meet anybody like her again, or it'll never be the same. And it's that, you know, like mountain out of a molehill.
Yes.
And sometimes there's a place for the crazy humor, and David will appreciate this, the crazy humor in the firehouse.
Yeah.
You know, I've had relationship issues in the past, and, you know, at the moment you're crushed and, you know, you own a firehouse and, you know, there is a time for it, and you have to be sensitive about it to a certain degree. But yeah, there's a time when you'll come in and you're like, oh my God, I'm so upset. And, you know, I'll never meet anybody like her again. And, you know, they'll be like, yeah, there's a million of them out there. The next bus comes along in 5 minutes. And there is something to that.
Yes.
When you're waiting at the bus stop.
Right. You can't imagine the next bus is going to be there in 5 minutes. Yeah.
And it will. And most of the time, whatever my brother's crises were, you know, he was having family issues with my father and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it'll pass.
Yes.
But not according to your schedule.
Right. So, this too shall pass. There is wisdom in that. This too shall pass. It may take a week. It may take a year. But there's a good chance that you're not going to be steeped in it forever.
No, the mountain out of the molehill thing. And again, to qualify that, you know, somebody couldn't say to me at the time when my brother took his life, Joe, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. No, that was a mountain, but it was not an unsurpassable mountain.
Okay.
Then you have to say, I don't know if I'm going to get past this mountain. It doesn't even feel like it. Like I said before, it doesn't feel like I'm going to get over this mountain. So then go talk to other people that got past the mountain.
Yep.
And they'll say, I went to a support group where a mother and father came home and they hit the electric garage door opener and his son's hanging in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
So then I said to myself, at least I didn't have to witness it. As grotesque as that sound, you know, it's a horrible way and how he did it, but I didn't have to witness it. This family had to witness it, hit the electric garage door opener and your son's hanging in the garage. That image is going to be, it will be with them forever, but there'll be a come a time that it won't be as grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, when you talk about it, there's times to talk about and times to not. But that's my advice to firefighters that are, even whatever it is, relationship, financial, work issues, don't turn it into this gigantic mountain. And it might, listen, my brother taking his life was a mountain. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say, it's a mountain, you know, and firehouse humor, David. And if I walked into a firehouse, the guy said, what's a big deal? He probably wasn't happy anyway. No, I probably would have decked the guy. But, you know, you say, all right, this is a mountain, and find other people that got over the mountain.
Yes.
And you don't care that much. You're like, I don't care. This is my situation. And right. You don't understand. No, they do understand because it was their son. It was their daughter. It was their wife. It was their uncle. It was their aunt. It was somebody big in their life. So just find other, my advice is if you're in it, don't make a mountain out of a molehill, mm-hmm. whatever it is, financial relationship, anything. Someday there'll be humor to be found in it, you know, and you know, you'll get there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, like I said, I don't feel like a warrior. I went and found other warriors that were further down the line than me.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're deeply sorry for your loss, Joseph. And thank you so much for sharing this so honestly and openly, because I'm sure it will touch someone who's perhaps struggling with a similar problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope so. And listen, when you're in it, you know, when you're in the middle of it, firefighters out there that are listening, like I said, whatever the issue is, even a suicide, I mean, it seems insurmountable. And you're just going to have to learn to live with the mountain. That's, you know, you may not get over the mountain, but you're going to have to learn to live with this mountain in the room. And it won't always seem like a mountain, you know, and that perspective is everything, you know. I mean, the fire service is wonderful that, you know, I've been out with people and say, oh my God, it's cold out. Cold. I've been in a towel ladder when it was minus 10 degrees with 30 mile an hour wind. Yeah. And I looked like a giant icicle. And matter of fact, when they took me down from the towel ladder and they took my helmet off, they were breaking off pieces of my hair because it was frozen. Well. And I go, so when you say it's cold, it, in relation to what? You know,
right. Everything's relative.
Everything's, right? Yes. And that's what you, yep. That's how you try to perspectivize it, I guess is the word.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way to put it, because that's what helps us through any adverse situation is perspective, being able to step back or at least break it down into, you know, bite-sized chunks that are manageable. So,
yep.
Responder Resilience is your place for insightful discussions for emergency services professionals, including law enforcement, EMS, fire service, 911 telecommunicators, animal control, rescue squads, K-9 officers, corrections, trauma-informed therapists, and agency leaders. We bring you leading experts and influencers in emergency services, sharing knowledge and tools to improve the culture of wellness and to inspire excellence in leadership. Tune in live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the weekly premiere on YouTube and Facebook. Or stream episodes anytime on ResponderTV.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Stay current with hot topics, informative content, and get valuable insights on how to lead a healthier life both on and off the job by subscribing to us on YouTube and Facebook. Responder Resilience is committed to our family of public safety professionals. Remember to like and subscribe today.
Let's shift gears, kind of work our way into the firehouse meal, cuisine, cooking, chefing topic. We'll just start with a general question about, and it's kind of like for those of us who have worked in a firehouse, we kind of know the answer, but maybe for someone who hasn't, why is mealtime so important at the firehouse?
Well, not unlike a family, it's the time when you gather together, where you do your most deepest conversations, mm-hmm. your most humor, your most... You know, we all have a living room. We have a bathroom. We have, if you're in the living room, people are watching TV. If in the bathroom, you're doing your business. If you're in the kitchen, in the bedroom, you're sleeping. Kitchen is pretty much where people gather, whether it's home or in a firehouse. So firehouse mm-hmm. is no different. Yeah. You know, so we're going about our business, checking the gear, equipment, and phone, whatever you're doing. All of a sudden, it's chow time. Everybody sits at the meal together. Mm-hmm. Just like a family. And which not many people are doing nowadays because of cell phones and all that other crazy stuff sure. that's going on. But yeah. it becomes a place to gather and talk over life, humor, fun, and you're also enjoying a great meal too.
Yeah. I just wanted to throw in there that the preparation piece, right? Like you start to get smells inside the firehouse, people coming in and going, hey, what are you cooking tonight? Or, you know, they get involved in like observing the process, and it kind of sets the tone for, hey, something really great is going to happen at mealtime tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the smell, the cooking, the preparation, even talking while you're doing the preparation, you know, it's all part of it. It's inherent to the firehouse tradition. It's inherent to a family tradition. Even when somebody passes away, what's the first thing they do? They bring over a tray of lasagna.
Sure. Yes.
Right, sit down and eat. You know, you still got, all right, I lost my whoever, friend, family member, whatever. You still got to eat. Hmm. You know, you may not feel like it, but And I've seen that where people really lost somebody in there. Just you bring them something to eat, you know. And it's a warmly personal gift to make a meal for somebody.
Sure it is. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Some would say even it's love, right? You're giving them, you don't know, you can't take their pain away, right? You can't really fix the situation, but you're giving them food, which is, you know, this is what we, you have to give an infant food or it's going to die, right? It can't feed itself, right? So it's like the first sign of exchange between people of, you know, I care for you here. I want you to carry on, you know? And so food can be looked at as love.
Nothing says loving like something from the oven. How do you like that?
Yeah, yeah.
I love and that.
especially when it's being prepared with love. Like, you know, like we had an amazing chef on our shift and he would always find something we'd never had before, go out and buy some really exotic spices or ingredients. And you could just tell he was putting love into it. And, you know, the results were always like beyond like, you know, anything we'd ever eat before.
It's a deeply personal thing to prepare a meal for somebody. Yeah, you can go to buy a cheesecake from the supermarket and bring it over to somebody's house and they taste good and everything. But when you made it, especially if it came out great. Yeah, I remember I worked with a great fireman. I worked with Mike Lav and he came in drunk out of his mind one night. We put him upstairs. He slept in the fires. And in the morning, I went up and made him an omelet and brought it to him. And I saw him a couple of years ago and he says, I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Wow.
I had a screaming headache from a hangover. I slept it off in the fires. I got up in the morning. And I could smell food. And you brought to my bed, you brought me a tray of an omelet. And he says, this doesn't mean we're going out or anything, Mike.
It's that other kind of love.
Yeah, that's a different kind of love. Don't get too warm and fuzzy on me.
Right. But you took it to the next level. Like, so you, I imagine, started cooking in the firehouse and people were smitten with the with your food, and then you had competitions and you won and you've gone pretty far. So what made you turn the corner and become professional at this?
Well, if any of the firefighters that I work with are listening right now, they're probably throwing their computer through the wall when you say the word smitten. Because I was really just an average firehouse chef. I wasn't anything off the
charts. Nothing special?
No, and I didn't have any professional training, but I did realize early on that some of the firefighters, their nutrition and their eating were like crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd be, and I always use that story. They'd be making mashed potatoes for eight people and putting four sticks of butter in it.
Yeah.
Peeling the butter sticks like bananas and throwing them in.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then whip it. And I'm like, you know, they were overweight, you know, and I, not all of them, but some. And I'm like, you know. And the machismo thinking always was like, hey, listen, you can get killed next week in a fire. If I feel like eating cheesecake and mashed potatoes, I'm going to eat it. I go, yeah, but if you don't get killed, hopefully you don't, you may wind up retiring and being, you know, unhealthy, heart attack, other cardiac arrest. Multiple things can happen, joint problems from overweight, and maybe your jaw performance, which, God forbid, you question jaw performance. But, yeah, I've seen it where – you know, I had to go up eight, you know, especially New York high rises, you're going to go up to 8-10 floors with 80 pounds of equipment.
Yeah.
And you're 100 pounds overweight. Mm. And the guy's on the second floor landing with his mask off, sucking real estate because he can't breathe because he's overweight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so you can't promote it. You do it by attraction, which I always try to stay fit and prepare healthier meals a little bit, sneak it in there a little bit. You know, maybe I would put in mashed potatoes instead of 4 sticks of butter, I'd put roasted garlic.
Nice.
Yeah. And, you know, it still was flavorful. You know, it still has to
be flavorful. Absolutely. You put garlic in anything, it's really good.
Well,
not brownies.
But. Yeah. Well, the thinking always was, you know, like, you know, you can't run into burning buildings on salad. Rabbit food, they used to call it. I'm not eating rabbit food.
Yeah, but there's a lot in between just salad and tofu and 4 sticks of butter in your mashed potatoes. There's a lot of wiggle room in there, you know?
A ton of wiggle room. And so I just said, stay out of the kitchen. I'll make whatever and then just eat it. And if they eat it and it tasted great, then I don't even have to tell them what was or wasn't eliminated from the food.
Correct. Yep.
And then what happened was the book thing was a complete and utter accident. You know, there was a course at the New School called How to Write a Cookbook and Get It Published. And I was in between shifts. I didn't want to drive all the way out to where I lived out in Long Island. So I said, you know, it's in Manhattan. It's this fall day. I'll take a course. at the new school. And, you know, it was the first time they offered the course, how to write a cookbook and get it published. I didn't go with the intentions of publishing a book.
Okay.
I just said, I'll get the information. You know, I like to cook, so, you know, maybe. And, you know, it's a summer weekend. Might be some girls in the class. They'll say, oh, a fireman that cooks. He's single. Mm-hmm. You know, basically to pick up chicks.
Okay.
Not really, but I said, it's a possibility. You know, you're going to be in a class in Manhattan and you're cooking. Oh, look, he cooks. He's so sensitive. Mm-hmm. So I took the class and with not the intention of writing a book, to forward the story a little bit, in 1984, a New York fireman named John Cennino wrote a book called The Firefighter's Cookbook. Uh-huh. It went on to be on the New York Times bestseller list for 9 weeks in a row. It just went, what the word now is viral, it went viral. He was on TV. It was amazing. But he had a triple bypass. So when the teacher in the class said, okay, first day we're having the classes today, the first time we're running this class, I want everybody to give their idea for a cookbook. I'm like, oh my God, I don't have an idea. And they started going around the room. And because it's New York, everybody was trying to be noticed. So their name dropped. And, oh, I went to the Culinary Institute in Hyde Park. I'm a graduate summa cum laude. I trained in Switzerland and France. I'm a pilot. Right. I'm a firehouse cook. And look at the company I'm in. And when they got to me, I said, think quick. So they got to me and I said, well, listen, my name is Joseph Bonanno, New York City fireman. I just got certified as a fitness trainer and a nutritionist. There was a successful fireman cookbook years ago, but he had a triple bypass. I'd probably do a healthy firehouse cookbook.
Oh, okay.
And the teacher said, that's a pretty good idea.
Wow.
Because I mentioned it this afternoon. We have a publisher coming in. Wow. So then everybody went around the room, same thing, all name dropping. In the afternoon, the publisher came in and she was like Adolf Hitler when she gave her a speech. She was like, this is the way you do it. You put a thing, proposal, and if we don't like it, it gets rejected. You make sure everything was like, I don't have any of this. And there were people in the class with stacks of recipes ready to publish. Wow. I had some few things I made in the firehouse. So she did her like staccato presentation and then she says, 5 minutes, I open the floor, give me your idea. I'm like, wow, I'm not even raising my hand. Everybody's hand went up but mine. The other people raising their hand and they said, same thing, name dropping. Oh, I went to the Culinary Institute in Hyde Park. I want to do a Swedish cookbook. Trained in Switzerland. Oh, the you know, regional cookbooks are not in right now. Next. And she was shooting people down like that. I'm like, and I'm sinking in the seat. And the teacher says, well, thank you everyone for coming. Don't be shy if you have a really good idea. Like a fireman, for instance. And he goes, would you stand up and say your idea? So I said, you know, hi, my name's Joseph Bonanno. There was a fireman cookbook in 1984. Was very successful, was on the New York Times bestseller list, but he had triple bypass. I'm a trained fitness trainer. I would probably do a healthy firehouse cookbook. She goes, what a wonderful idea. Would you talk to me after class? I think everybody in the class was ready to kill me.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because it's New York. You're looking to get noticed. And
of course, they're mortified. Who's this guy?
I'm ready. And this guy comes in with a notepad and he's trying to get girls' telephone numbers. And they're offering it to him on a silver platter. And that's what happened. So I went up to the desk. She said, this is my personal card. I'm the editor of Hearst Publishing. Do you have an agent?
Okay.
Do you have an agent? I said, agent?
Agent, what's that?
I'm a fireman. I have a hose and an axe and a red truck. I don't have an agent. She goes, well, you have to get an agent. I'll get you one on Monday. That's how the process worked. The agent walked me through the process. I put an ad in Firehouse Magazine at the time for recipes, and I got about 70 or 80 recipes, and I used about 50 of my own, submitted it. You submit a proposal with 10 recipes, but it was done already. I mean, they wanted it. They were going to do it, you know, walk me through the process, whatever. And then in 1995, next thing I know, I'm on Regis, Good Morning America, Today Show, Martha Stewart. It like took on a whole life of its own. And it was so crazy because the firemen I work with were like pulling their hair out. They're like, all you make is a tuna fish sandwich and scrambled eggs in the morning. And then he's going, going crazy.
That's great. Well, it's a testament to like timing and not timing. Being prepared, right? Sometimes like not being prepared is better than being overprepared.
Well, again, with the celebrity thing, you don't know. And I asked the agent later, I said to her, listen, if I had come to you without this class thing happening and the editor, she goes, yes, we would have did it. What? You're a New York City fireman. You're in shape. You have the, you didn't have the cooking background, but you had the fitness and nutrition background. Mm-hmm. You took a previously successful idea and, you know, quantified it. So she said, yes. And she goes, you're a great person to be able to sell it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know,
so now, but I had no idea what comes along with it, which is all the promotion and the TV and the, yeah. I mean, it was nuts. I was still working full time. So it would be like, all right, you know, tomorrow morning you're going on Regis Philbin and the next day you're doing this and the next day you're doing that. I'm looking at my calendar. I'm like, oh my God. And then, you know, it was fun. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I got to meet Robert De Niro, Harry Connick. I mean, you know, you'd be in the green room. And then I would always engage the firefighters with it.
This episode is made possible by Rebound by Restore Ear, revolutionary cold therapy for hearing loss prevention. To learn more, visit RestoreEar.com. That's RestoreEar.com.
Our greatest asset is a thinking, knowledgeable, well-trained, physically fit, and healthy firefighter. It is the continual drive to be better, to improve, and to never be satisfied with the status quo. Success begins long before the alarm comes in or the tones go off. Success is nothing new in the FDNY. We did not suddenly wake up one day and become good at what we do. We need enthusiastic leadership and training that has a clear understanding of what's at stake. That is teamwork. That is dedication. That is well-trained firefighters ready to go to work on game day. The time to train is now, before the incident or game day.
We've all seen the leader who's tactically proficient but lacks the people skills for true inspirational leadership. Cornerstones of Leadership, on and off the fire ground, discusses the soft skills necessary for success, both on and off the fire ground.
What kind of recipes would you do on those shows? Like, what would you demonstrate?
Well, it's up to them. You know, I'd say, well, what do you want to do today? You want to, how long is the segment? You know, what would you like? You know, you kind of put it in their court a little bit. Mm-hmm. Would you like to do a dessert? What facility, you know, do you have actually have a stove there? Sometimes they don't.
Yep.
You know, if you don't have a stove, you have to bring a prepared thing, you know? And, but yeah, and I got to share it with the guys I work with. And a lot of times they came to the firehouse too, which was always funny because they would come to the firehouse. I'll never forget I think it was ABC News or something came to the firehouse and we were doing a segment and the girl videographer was there and the other guy and they're setting the lighting up and they're doing everything. And like right in the middle of, I'm working. I mean, right in the middle of cooking, we get a run, you know, and she's like, oh, this is great. This is great. Oh, we didn't get the shot. Could you come back? No, we're going to somebody's house for you. We can't come back and reshoot it, you know? Right. And then one time they actually, I forget who it was. They came with us to and it turned out to be an actual fire. And we had, you know, actually had a, and she's, oh, this is great. I go, no, it's not. Somebody's house is burning down. It's not great.
Well, she's just thinking, I'm getting great B-roll out of this.
Getting B-roll out of it. Yeah. So the whole process became really funny, and it just led to some unbelievable opportunities, you know, before it. And then 9/11, you know, 9/11 happened, and really, which I'm glad for me that all of this happened before that, because I totally did not want to be looked at as somebody that, because, you know, they made FDNY into, we were like rock stars, you know, after 9/11. And, you know, it would be look terrible if all of a sudden you're like taking advantage of that. And so anytime I was on TV, and they knew, they go, no, he was involved with this long before 9/11. He was doing this long before 9/11. But,
right.
And then I raised over $75,000 for widows and children's after mm-hmm. that. You know, so I said, yeah, if you want to use me for doing promotional stuff, you know, maybe some other time we could do a whole nother show. I was there at 9/11. I was doing a TV thing on the morning of 9/11. The whole crew I was with got killed. Mm-hmm. I almost responded myself. It was, that's a whole nother story. That's on my website if anybody wants to read it. But because of the book, I ended up doing a TV promotional thing the morning of 9/11 at Lattice 3, downtown Manhattan, on the morning of 9/11. And the whole crew that was there got killed. And I left by literally 2 minutes. So.
Well, Well, as we're getting close to the end of our conversation, talk a little bit about what you're up to these days, your books and any cooking shows and whatever projects you got going on. What do you have?
Well, the I wanted to do a commemorative book for the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And the other book was already starting to be old, and so am I. And, you know, I want to stay current, so I did a book called American Firehouse Cuisine. You can see it on Amazon or go to my website, www.AmericanFirehouseCuisine.com. I'll sign it personally and send it out to you. So I did a 9/11 book for the 20-year anniversary, which was in 2021. And then I was approached a few times to do a TV show, you know, because I was on TV a lot. And they said, hey, what a great idea. You slide down the pole, you cook, you know, people love firemen. So we tried it in 2012 with another fireman, but the first day that the show was airing, Superstorm Sandy hit. So nobody had TVs. Nobody had. So we did like 8 or 9 episodes, and it just fell flat on its face. Mm. And I think that other firefighter continued to do it. And then I had all the props, believe it or not, a brass fire pole, gear, equipment, stuff like that. So recently, in the last year, I decided to rent a warehouse, build a studio myself with the pole, and do it. So I've actually taped 3 episodes already. And, you know, I was telling David earlier, getting familiar with taping and how to do all of that. And whether gimmick-wise it works or not, I don't know. That's up to the audience to decide if I'm viable as a host or whatever. So all I can do is do the best I can. Studio came out fantastic. I slide down the pole every day. Not every day, but every episode. Intro segment, and then we'll make whatever dish we make, and then soon the next episode I'm probably going to do this week. After that, I want to start having guests because I was telling David it's much easier to have a guest on it. So my eventual goal was to have a firehouse cooking show.
Yes.
The whole set looks like a New York firehouse, slide down the pole, signature entrance, and then have guests from around the country. Like, let's say you're from Nantucket Fire Department. Maybe that person will be making a clam chowder, and then he'll tell me a little bit about what it's like to be a firefighter on Nantucket. You know, it's busy in the summer and resort area, and the winter it's kind of quiet. And we have fresh seafood, so we tend to make seafood recipes. And Texas would be a barbecue, you know. So,
absolutely, yeah. I could see that, or like a regional. What do you specialize in? Like, what do you?
There was nothing I really specialized in. My name, Joe Bonanno, not like
Italian.
Yeah, but that's not really what I
specialize in.
Lasagna. That's not right. Well, when I went to culinary school, that's what I did. It really professionalized my cooking, which I decided to do after I was getting a lot of TV stuff, and I wasn't a professional chef or anything, and I was getting so much TV stuff, and I was doing a demo down in Philly, and the one guy said, "Oh, well, you don't need to learn how to cook. All you need is a uniform and big biceps." And he was another chef, professional chef. So that stuck in my head. I didn't want to be questioned again. So I went to culinary school and got my culinary degree. So I would have professional background in it. I didn't want to, you know, I lean more towards firefighter than chef, but I wanted to have that in my resume. So
makes sense. Where can people find you? Website, social media, any other place that people can reach out to you?
If you go to www.AmericanFirehouseCuisine.com, that'll get you to the site. The shows are all on there.
Okay.
But I think you could just type into YouTube American Firehouse Cuisine, and you'll see you'll see the first 2 episodes. But that's probably the best way to get a hold of me. And yes, we talked about suicide and first responder stuff. I'm certainly going to – one of my first guests is going to be this Jeff Dill from FFBHA.org, who deals with firefighter suicides. I'm going to have him on. And I don't – you know, unfortunately, that's such a negative topic. Even 9/11, you know, people say, Joe, enough with the 9/11 stuff, which sounds kind of cold, but it is part of the resume, part of the history. But most people want to be happy. And that's why dealing with suicide is really hard, because your friends lose you for a while. Mm-hmm. You're not the person you are. And they don't want it. Most people don't want it. They want to be happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I have to have a fine line between talking about it and having a show that people want to watch, not be, you know, taken down by. Mm-hmm. So, you know, try to keep it in its proper perspective. So also, if any firefighters are listening, I also do in-person health, wellness, and nutrition seminars for firefighters. I'm just starting to do that again. So if any of the firehouses are interested in having me do a talk on fitness and nutrition, I got a great PowerPoint presentation and on fitness and nutrition.
Sounds great.
Yeah, fitness and nutrition. I'm dying to do that again because it, you know, I, not being in the firehouse for a long time, you miss that camaraderie. So when I do these conventions and stuff, I, you know, and everybody I've talked to has been just so great about it when I when I do them. So I'll put that out there too, and that's available on my website too if anybody wants.
Wow, thank you so much.
In-person stuff, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, great to speak with you. Thanks again for sharing all of that today with us, and continued success with your TV show and your cookbooks and all the other projects.
All right. Thank you, David. I hope we touched somebody today. You too, Stacy. Thank you.
So nice to meet you, Joseph.
Appreciate the work you're doing out there for us first responders, too.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Remember to like and subscribe. YouTube, Responder Resilience. Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc. and Responder TV. EBSRadio.com, all the podcast platforms. Check out our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.